Part 16, Chapter 4. There was plenty of time. His business with the Chamco brothers was important, but a few minutes would make no difference. He had certainly better see whether he could find out what Turl was up to. The size of the throng was growing. The bulk of the trainees at the academy, when they heard Johnny had appeared at the compound, demanded a few hours off, instantly, and the schoolmaster, understanding, but unable to do anything about it anyway, had let them off, and here they were in a swarm. More people were in from New Denver. All work had stopped, and machines were now deserted in the underground shops at the compound. Several council members appeared on the outskirts of the crowd. They included Brown Limper Staffer, chief of this continent. More than 600 people were now there. The din was nearly deafening. Turl saw the animal coming toward the cage and capered more violently. Johnny saw the area was not much changed or damaged by the battle. The geysering water had cut a few furrows on the plateau in its runoff. A bar or two of the cage was nicked by bullets. Water had tended to wash the cage clean rather than damage it. He looked up to the connector box on the pole and saw it had not been changed. The bars were electrically charged in the same way, by the same cables. Someone had put a barrier of mine fencing so people could not reach the bars. Yes, it was much the same cage, except that green grass grew in tufts around the perimeter. His attention came away from the crowd. How many months had he been inside, looking out? And how many nights had he stood outside, looking in? A lot of nightmare was mixed up in that. He wanted to question Turl. He flinched from talking through those bars again. A normal voice volume could not reach anywhere in this hubbub, and he was not about to sit here shouting. He caught the eye of a sentry and beckoned him over. But instead of the sentry coming, the compound commander pushed through to him. Johnny saw that the man was an Argyle by his kilt. He leaned over to him to be heard.
Would you please turn off the electricity up there and have a guard open the door of the cage?
What?
Exclaimed the compound commander in astonishment. Johnny thought he might not have heard and repeated his request. Then he saw the man was refusing. There was always a little friction between the Argyles and the Clan Fergus. Indeed, it had often erupted in clan warfare, and he recalled that only his visit to Scotland had interrupted the last war. Johnny was not going to argue with the man, and he wasn't going to yell at Turl through bars. Robert the Fox looked at Turl, the cage, the Argyle, the crowd, and the connector box on the pole. He reached out to check Johnny, but Johnny had already leaned forward and swung off his horse. Colonel Ivan breasted some people aside and thrust the knob carry into Johnny's hand. Hobbling, Johnny made his way to the exterior pole switch and pulled it open, having to balance against the pole to free his hand. It popped an electric spark as the bus bar opened. The crowd parted for him when they saw in which direction he was trying to walk. Suddenly, they became very quiet. The silence starting from where Johnny was and going out like a wave to the very outskirts. The cage sentry had not left his post in all this hubbub. He carried the door keys in his belt. Johnny pulled the keys out of the guard's belt. There was a ripple of excited questioning from people and then tense silence. Turl took the opportunity to roar ferociously. The compound commander started to rush forward, but found himself halted by the huge hand of Colonel Ivan, who had simply leaned down from his horse. The colonel wanted no extra bodies in a field of fire. The other Cossacks fanned out abruptly. There was the sharp clatter of assault rifle bolts being cocked, and four rifles were leveled at Turl in the cage. Some Scots sprinted to the roofs of the old Chinko quarters, and the rush of running feet was replaced by the snicks of rifles being cocked and leveled on Turl. The crowd surged back away from the barriers. Johnny heard the rifle bolts. He turned, speaking in a normal voice, for it was now quiet except for the roaring of Turo.
A bullet could ricochet off these bars and go into the crowd, so please put your guns up.
He loosened the blast pistol in the holster, and then, as an afterthought, checked to see that it was cocked and on stun and no flame. But he was convinced he was in no danger. Turl had a collar on and was chained, and while it wouldn't be wise to get within physical reach of him, the only thing Turl would try would be some antic from the apparent mood he was in. The door lock worked more easily than it used to. Someone must have oiled it. He opened it. There was an intake of breath from the crowd. Johnny's attention was not for the crowd. Turl roared.
Quit clowning, Turl,
said Johnny. Turl promptly did, and hunkered down against the back wall, his amber eyes evilly amused.
Well, hello, animal!
The parson's voice rapped out from somewhere in the crowd.
He is not an animal!
Johnny hadn't realized the parson spoke Cyclo.
I see,
said Turl to Johnny,
that somebody clawed you up. Oh well, it happens when one is stupid. How'd it happen, rat brain?
Be civil, Turl. What do you think you were doing in this cage?
Oh, that Chinko accent. Try as I would, I could never make you into a polished, literate being. Very well. If it's courtesy you want, and as you speak Chinko, why, forgive this ignorant intrusion of speech into your lordly earbones.
He was going to go on with a string of the old Chinko abasements. Then he laughed viciously.
Answer the questions, Turl.
Why, I'm...
blank. And he said a cyclo word Johnny had never heard before. Johnny had had another purpose in coming in here. He wanted to see what Turl may have set up that somebody else had missed. He hobbled around the cage, staying wide of Turl and keeping part of an eye on him. He looked at the inside walls below the bars, looked into the pool. Turl had a small pile of things wrapped in a tarpaulin. Johnny motioned with his left hand for Turl to back up and went over to the loose package. He knelt and flipped it open. There was a garment in there, no more than a wraparound. Turl was wearing another one now and was otherwise naked. There was a bent kerbango saucepan with a hole in it and no kerbango. And a cyclo dictionary. What on earth would the very educated Turl, in cyclo at least, be doing with a cyclo dictionary? Johnny backed up out of the reach of the chain. What was the word Turl had just used? Ah, there it was. Repenting. The action of being sorrowful or self-reproachful for what one has done or failed to do. A word adopted from the Huckner language and said to be actually experienced by some alien races.
Repenting? You?
It was his turn to laugh.
Didn't I put you in a cage? Don't you realize that it could give one feelings of...
blank? Johnny looked that word up. Guilt. The painful feeling of self-reproach, resulting from a conviction one had done something wrong or immoral. Adopted from the Chinko language and useful to political officers in degrading individuals of subject races. Said by Professor Holtz, to factually exist as an emotion in some aliens. He popped the book shut.
You must have some too, animal. After all, I was like a father to you, and you labored day and night to shatter my future. In fact, I clearly suspect that you just used me so you could betray me.
Like the exploding truck?
What exploding truck?
The delivery flatbed.
Said Johnny, patiently.
Oh, I thought you meant that blade scraper you got yourself trapped in. The one that blew up out there on the plateau. You animals are always hard on machinery.
He sighed.
So, here I am. The
blank
subject of your revenge.
Johnny didn't bother to look up the word. He knew it would be another one no Cyclo would ever use.
I didn't order you in this cage or into that collar. You did. By rights, I should ask them to put you back in the dormitory level. Capering around here half naked.
I don't think you will,
said Turl evilly.
Why did you come down here today?
It was better not to talk too much to Turl. But if he didn't, he couldn't get him to leak data.
I came down to ask the Chamco brothers about the delay on the transshipment rig.
I rather thought you must have,
said Turl. He seemed indifferent. He heaved out a long sigh into his breathe mask and stood up. The crowd outside drew back with a frightened mutter. The monster was almost 4 feet taller than Johnny. Claws, fangs visible through its mask.
Animal, in spite of vast difference, I think I should tell you one thing. You will be coming to me for help soon. And as I am...
blank.
And...
blank. Two more words Johnny wouldn't bother to look up.
I probably will be stupid enough to help you. So just remember, animal, when it gets too difficult, come to see Turl. After all, weren't we always shaftmates?
Johnny let out a bark of laughter. This was simply too much. He threw the dictionary over on the tarpaulin, and leaning heavily on his knob carry, back to Turl, he walked out of the cage. The moment he had closed and locked the door, Turl let out a dreadful roar and began prancing about, beating his chest. Johnny threw the keys to the guard and went over and turned the electricity back on. He was still laughing to himself as he hobbled toward Windsplitter. The crowd was way back, making sounds of relief. Not everyone was way back. Brown, limper Staffer was between Johnny and the horse. Johnny recognized him and was about to greet him. Then Johnny stopped. He had never before seen such naked, malevolent hatred on anyone's face.
I see there are two cripples now,
said Brown Limper Staffer. He abruptly turned his back on Johnny and limped off, his clubfoot dragging.